We're here today with Wonderwear. Introduce yourselves.
I'm Rob McGreevy with Wonderwear, and I'm the Director of Product Portfolio and Industry Solutions.
Okay.
I'm Paul Forney, and I'm a System Architect for IPS Wonderwear.
Excellent.
And also Chief Architect of Visualization at Wonderwear.
Perfect. So let's talk, what do you guys do? What's your core business?
We're basically a software provider for the industrial and manufacturing segments. So our software's in a lot of plants and infrastructure environments. So food plants, we do things like packaging line equipment. We provide a lot of visibility solutions and analysis and connectivity in for those different market segments.
Okay. And one of your key products is Information Server?
Well, one of the products is Wonderwear Information Server, which is part of our system platform.
Okay.
I think our big market leader, people know Wonderwear for the InTouch application, which is human-machine interface, or HMI.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about that, can we?
Sure.
All right. So let's talk then, what's the sort of the basic architecture of an HMI system?
Well, starting from the early days, we were the first HMI on Windows, on Microsoft Windows, back in 1987.
Wow.
Yeah. And back then, the architecture was simply a box, a Windows box, with our software running onto it, with a hard-coded connection to what we call a PLC, or the programmable logic controllers.
Okay.
PLCs are what actually control things in a plant. They're locked up in closets, industrially hardened hardware, and that's where the real I/O is connected to the valves, pumps, and signals from a plant. Mm. So our software would be on top of that and allow operators in the control room to look at those signals and actually control things in the plant, but do it graphically with graphical images and animation. So when a pump was on, you could change its color, or you could see levels going up and down in tanks and things moving around the screen. So
awesome. Do some kind of control as well sometimes. If you want to do supervisory control of the different equipment, you can do that from the graphical environment as opposed to some of the other stuff.
Now, you guys, you mentioned 87, so you've been working with us for a while.
Yes.
Let's go back a little bit in history, though. I mean, what led you to, to Microsoft in the 80s?
Well, I guess it was the ease of use, the Windows environment, the graphical, real graphical type environments. What before I came to Wonderwear, I used to use the other products that were on the market, and it used to take, we'd bid like 6 weeks to do a project to do the HMI side of things. But when InTouch came out, you could do the same amount of work in about 6 hours. Mm. So this new thing called cut and paste, and was all of a sudden you take your work and copy it, and you can have 10 tanks that you used to struggle to do every line of every color change that you do on the screen with some line of code. But with this Windows version of Wonderwear, things became fun, they came fast. And,
right, back then a lot of the systems were old console-based systems, a lot of old kind of ugly text screens, and it was real expensive and costly to manage and maintain these things. And together with Windows and a lot of the Wonderwear technology, made it a lot more effective and easier for people to kind of get the systems up and running, gave them more of a modern look and feel, and allow people to actually interact with their systems a lot more than they could in previous days because of the graphics environments and the data that they had was much more rich and much more attainable.
Okay, and of course you have a lot of logic and code running in services, right? Mm-hmm. So let's try to paint the picture for me. I mean, you have, some sort of plant that's doing something, and what you guys provide is a graphical inroad to several different services inside the plant doing whatever they do, giving one person a look at history and current situations. Can you just kind of fill us in a little bit? I mean,
sure.
We have that really complicated thing looking in the back that people are noticing.
Well, I think we've come a long way since 1987, so it's no longer, one box connected to a PLC.
So is Windows.
Right. But we've actually started with, we have what we call now the system platform, which contains a lot of pieces, or some very significant pieces. One is our Orchestra application server. This is generating information from the factory floor, but doing it in a very object-oriented way. Mm. Allowing engineers to create templates out of their pumps and their valves, or even their processes, and then to create instances of those, so easily saving their engineering work, putting scripts behind them, having connectivity to almost any .NET function there is, you know, and or bringing their own script libraries in and making calls to that.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, what we've seen is that, you know, since 1987, we've obviously evolved, and what we're seeing is a lot more of the systems now are getting larger and larger and larger, much more complicated, a lot more data sources, so they need a much more structured way of managing and configuring these systems, and that's what the system platform from Wonderware and Orchestra actually does. Mm-hmm. And beneath a lot of that is a lot of the modern Microsoft technologies, things like SQL Server and so on. Mm-hmm. So that's the new evolved technologies come quite a ways for us in the last few years.
Excellent. We use a lot of SQL Server, you know, so I think we're one of your biggest resellers.
All right. Well, I mean, it's all about data, right?
Right. It's data. We do a lot with data. We do the real-time information, you know, coming from the actual devices. Mm-hmm. We historize that information to historians. Mm-hmm. We actually control the manufacturing execution with manufacturing execution systems on top of our platform. We now have handhelds with the mobile devices, with mobile solutions, being able to bring in handheld type of data that everything's not always instrumented in a plant. You have to send somebody out there and do manual type readings. They put the information in, put the device in a cradle, and it sets up into our system, historizes, and is visualized by the operators. Mm-hmm. You know, so we have also a portal, Windows SharePoint services underneath that. Mm-hmm. To do web parts and bring information together like you see on the screen here. But that will also give the live information real-time, through a browser if you want to see that.
Yeah. We actually do reach out to a lot of different devices. You know, Paul was saying some of the workers that we have are no longer tethered. Mm-hmm. The operators of the past used to be kind of tethered to, screens basically on shop floor environments environments, but now they're more mobile, literally going around the plants with handheld wireless devices, using cell phones and things like that to deliver our information to those different platforms.
Perfect. I mean, that was sort of the kind of the vision of web services back when that term was coined, right?
Mm-hmm.
The client doesn't matter.
Right.
You just data happens, store it in the sky, manipulate it in the sky, and shoot it down to various things that can visualize the data in any number of ways. So
that's
really cool that this is happening. So let's, if I own a factory, right? Let's look at peanuts, for example, right? Mm-hmm. Even though the bad things have just been going on.
Yeah.
You guys come in, and if I have no sort of infrastructure in place for this, you do you help at that level, or you come in afterwards to build the nice layer on top of?
We typically come in when there's a lot of controls equipment already in there, so there may be packaging machines and lines and tanks and vessels. Mm-hmm. And what we end up doing is we layer our software infrastructure on top of basically everything in the plant. Yeah. We connect to all the different pieces, and we give it kind of a unified front end for basically everything that's going on. Mm. So not just the visibility piece, but as Paul mentioned earlier, the execution piece, how we actually make and manufacture things, how we sequence things, how we put labels on boxes, and how we use some of the traceability and things like that. So it's really an end-to-end piece.
Wow.
But yeah, typically we're after the equipment's in there, and we, again, like I said, layer in on top.
Sure. So you span basically from the lowest level programming languages all the way up to like ASP and HTML.
Sure. Yeah. Well, one important part that you just brought up, the peanuts, peanut butter, is our ability to do the tracing and tracking, you know, where you can take a serial number off a package of that peanut butter and trace it all the way back to the truck that brought the materials that made that package. Mm. And then you could get the idea, the lot ID from the truck, and trace the other way, the reverse genealogy, and find out every package that had material from that particular vendor inside it. So our traceability pieces of our system platform are really second to none, I think.
Yeah. Excellent. Mm-hmm. So let's have this again, this complicated, really interesting data full view over here. What's going on? Can you just take us through this real quick?
Well, do you want to go through the whole demo?
Yeah, let's talk about what we're looking at.
Yeah, well, this was a typical stream. This is for a power application between people that run the grid and people that supply energy to the grid. Mm-hmm. And it was done by the Solutions Group, and many years ago, but we started with a partnership with Microsoft and an alliance on what was at that time the live communication server.
Okay.
Right? So we started embedding that technology and being able to let multiple groups in an organization communicate in real time. Hmm. So when we were approached to build this application, it was right after the big blackout of the on the East Coast. Everybody remembers that, right?
Absolutely.
You know what caused it, right? Everybody thinks or knows, a plant went down, took 500 megawatts off the grid. Mm. The grid's not a battery, right? If you take something off of it, another generator has got to come up with the load, or things start collapsing. And it was a big domino effect that took the Eastern Seaboard out. So we were approached to come up with a solution that would get around that, but the real problem there was the lack of real-time communications between the people that run the grid and the people that supply energy to the grid, the power plants themselves. So this application involves a lot of components, certainly lots of SQL Server, BizTalk for workflow, and our system platform behind the scenes, so with application server, our historian. Our portal, of course, the portal technology and web parts. Mm-hmm. But what it's doing right here, this is information that a system dispatcher would commonly look at when he's looking at a particular generator. And what he's seeing is the output of the generator. And my simulation here is wrapping a sine wave around what the generator is being told to do here. So this screen is actually pulling in real-time data from our application server or the generator itself, saying what is the real output of the generator. But it's also bringing in information, too, about what it's being told to do and its instructions here and what the generator operator says he can do, right? What is his capability. Mm-hmm. And that was our big use cases here, was how would we do the real-time communication between the grid when I give an instruction to an operator to come up to a load, mm-hmm. or for an operator to give a declaration back to the grid to say, hey, I'm reducing what I can do. I'm coming down for maintenance, or I've got a leaky bearing or something like that. So,
cool.
So would you want to see it working, or you want to?
Totally. Ask a quick question is, what is Office Communicate? I mean, I'm, without being like marketing for Office, which I'm not, mm-hmm. What did OCS give you, and what's the...
Yeah, Office Communication Server gave us the ability to link multiple groups together in real time.
Sure.
It gave us the ability to find the presence of people. So we use presence throughout this application. So when we need to send the message, we have to find out where that person is. And the presence that Office Communication Server gives us in the integration to the other things like phones and email, gives us the ability to say, you are where you are, and I can reach you at this location.
Excellent.
Yeah. So we're taking that thought process further inside of Wonderware and the system platform and allowing people to contact subject matter experts. So if I'm an operator on the plant floor and I see something bad about to happen, here I have the ability to say, here's all the subject matter experts, here's their presence, here's where they are. You can reach them on IM, their cell phone, their office phone, or email. You get them participating in the conversation and get get collaboration going. So all this is about bringing collaboration down into the factory floor.
Excellent.
And they can all make decisions because they're obviously all seeing the same type of information, so they can make decisions about load and trade-offs that they have to make throughout the day.
Right. Cool.
Yeah, in this particular application, it was easy because it's all web-based. And when it's on the plant floor, it's not, right? The plant floor operators are hooked to their machines, their desktop machines, and they're not typically connected to the internet, from the HMI portion of it. But we can connect securely. The Office Communication Server gives us secure communications like TLS, so that the communication that does happen between the plant floor and the grid operators is all encrypted and secure.
Okay.
So with the integration with Active Directory, we're able to find people, find out, have secure logons, and very difficult to spoof this type of a system. Mm-hmm. So it adds, especially this day and age, with the critical infrastructure needing to be secure, it's a key component. So we couldn't just use a regular messenger client for this sort of thing.
Understood. And I'd imagine the programming interface on top of OCS was pretty easy. I mean, you guys weren't writing a lot of super complex, low-level code to pull off this messaging infrastructure, since it's already there for you.
Right. The big part of it that's already there is great to be able to use that. And there's a fairly good API to use for that, both managed and unmanaged. Mm. And so in our bot scenario, we're using the managed API and be able to actually have a service that runs in the background that can receive messages programmatically and contact thousands of people if you needed to, right? And so have that kind of capability. So in this case, we only have a few people, and I have two people logged on here.
Right on.
So,
all right, well, take us through this.
Okay.
We'll continue to investigate.
Okay, hopefully. Let me just take you over to the operators node over here. So I have an operator here that wants to create a declaration for his unit. Declarations are basically what can you particularly do, and how much could you put on the grid if you were asked. Hmm. You know, and what's your minimum stable amount that you can generate? You can't be below that or above that. So this one is already at 500, but if I want to create a new one, I would just—it's all role-based, so it knows I'm the operator, and I'm able to change this. Say I can put 450 here, right? And I do a verify. Oop, I'm gonna have to put a code there. I'm just going to re-rate myself and do a verify, and that there sent a message to our app server, a check to make sure that the generator itself could do this declaration. It checked against what they call its nameplate rating. Mm-hmm. You know, if I was to put 1,000 in there and the generator manufacturer said, hey, this thing will never do it, you know, it'll bark at me. So,
okay.
All right, so anyway, I'm going to go ahead and submit that, and what that's going to do is start a workflow in the background. And BizTalk is running, so it's going to actually try and find the system dispatcher online that it needs to send a message to. That would be this guy over here. And he sends a message saying, okay, we've got a new declaration for your unit. You know, you can click here. Takes him to the portal if he wasn't already there, and shows him the declaration that the operator has just sent. So this pulls the declaration out. And just the fact that he's looking at it, it's a good thing, right? Because it tells the operator back here on the other node, he gets a message saying, at least I'm being acknowledged. I'm not accepted yet, but someone's looking at my declaration. It didn't go in the black hole, which sometimes things do with telephone calls, can't reach somebody, and I get busy about doing something else.
Absolutely.
Right? So anyway, that message came through, and the back to the dispatcher, he's... He can review it and say, do I want to allow this guy to derate himself? Maybe I need him at 500 megawatts, but this thing is 450 is good enough. I'll submit and say that's okay. And so the BizTalk workflow runs again and checks to make sure everything's all right and nothing changed while we were contemplating this stuff. And a message goes back to the operator saying that it's been accepted. So he cannot take an instruction larger than 450 megawatts.
Hmm.
So it works also in reverse for the other use case when I'm a system dispatcher and I want to give an instruction to an operator. So this particular, and once again, I'm all role-based. If I was to trying to do something, create some instruction for someone that, you know, I wasn't in the right role, it's all integrated with Active Directory and, you know, so.
Nice.
So anyway, I would create a new one and I tell it, if I tried to tell it to you do, say, 600 here, you know, do it as soon as possible and give you a reason, the verification would fail right away, you know, because it knows. It went and checked down with our app server. It knows that this unit, particular unit, has been declared that it's less than that. And that's, in fact, even outside its nameplate rating. Mm-hmm. So I'll do something it can do here, verify that was good, and submit it. It's the same thing. The workflow starts. It rechecks everything in the background, submits it, and we'll go back to the operator. And he's over here, and he gets a message saying that he now has an instruction waiting for him to look at. So he goes back to the portal. The portal recognizes it's him through all integrated Windows security. And he sees the instruction waiting for him. He clicks on it, and this piece of data is sitting here ready to go into the system, but not quite, right? It's not going to be downloaded into Orchestra for real-time work. But he can look at it, and the fact that he's looking at it, you know, we also send a message back to the dispatcher that, yes, indeed, someone has at least acknowledged it. It didn't go into the black hole, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm back here at the... at the operator, he can check, is this good enough? I can do it, that's fine, okay? And the fact that he's accepting it, now the big workflow starts, we're gonna move this information down into Orchestra. The Orchestra object responsible for this is now gonna do calculations on it, and we'll show you what he does. Let's go back to this guy first. We get a message, you know, that it's been accepted. So when we go back to this view here of our system, now you see something new inside of our chart. Remember back here, this came from the historical information. This little piece here, you know, comes from the real-time data from the system. And this is now the forecast into the future of how long it will take to get that generator to that new load. Hmm. Generators can't move instantaneously from one load to another, right? They go through what you call ramp rates, and we pointed these out in the beginning. So in order to move a generator from one load to another, you know, it has to be predicted into the future, so I can come over here and say my end time will be 1251 when that generator happens to be at the 200 megawatt load.
Excellent.
books.
So that's all well and good so far, but it still didn't touch on the problem of the East Coast, the big blackout, right? Because what happens when one of these guys goes down? And this is kind of cool that, let me go here. And I don't need this guy. I have a handy dandy little tool here, so I'm going to simulate a fault in the generator. It's one of our tools. So I'll bring up my object that's doing the simulation here. It's just basically pumping that sine wave around. It's also, this is an actual orchestra object that represents the generator. And I go to a fault attribute here. I'm just going to simulate a fault in this thing. So boom, new fault. So what do I expect to happen, right? Boom, I get a message, but not only me. As you see, the generator output went to zero.
Yeah.
And this thing's going to start showing lots of red here as the generator's down there. But now what happens is the bot in the background contacts everybody that's online.
Excellent.
Now everybody can start collaborating. Imagine instead of me telling one generator to put, you know, 450 megawatts on the grid, I can now talk to 10 different operators and say, each one of you put, you know, 50 for 55 on the grid so I can get the thing up very quickly. Mm-hmm. And these ramp rates will be within minutes rather than hours to get them to move that kind of a load. Mm-hmm. But see, this now with this bot, I can just start, you know, communicating back and forth between the everyone that's involved in this application. Then they get the messages and they can start communicating, man. You know, hey, I tripped over the cord, you know, something like that, you know.
Pull the plug, sorry.
So the communication is now, you know, between those people, those participants.
Mm-hmm. But these are people we're talking about.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
Right, now they're people talking and collaborating of what I can do to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. And there you have it. That's kind of a lot of the type of things we're doing. Mm-hmm. And WonderWare is extending the whole system platform to utilize this type of technology to collaborate with subject matter experts, because they're not everywhere. You can't have the best valve guy or the best maintenance person at every plant or the best recipe guy or the best manufacturing engineer. They may be spread out thin like we all are across many plants. You got to find them, find out how to connect with them, you know, and then be able to collaborate with them in any mode that he has available.
Sure. I mean, and again, the reason I brought up humans is because it seems like as we move more into sort of an automation robotics age, mm-hmm. this type of communication could be happening between machines, right? I
mean, right.
Clearly in plants, you have a lot of autonomous machines mm-hmm. in the sense that there's not an operator there. The machine has logic built into its hardware, there's software that drives that. So you guys could actually interface at that level.
Right. We actually see a lot, too, of demand response type applications. There's another one it's a little different than this, but solving the same problem where, and it's in the Pacific Northwest area out here, basically in order to try and provide more power based on peak times or when there's an increase, what they're able to do with our software is they actually tie into a lot of these generation facilities that are sitting idle. Like you see hospitals and schools and stuff have these big generators sitting around. Well, the customers of ours is basically tied in the same system using the same principles. And what they effectively do is remotely start up these different generators that are typically used for backups, but now they're actually using them to produce power, put it on the grid to avoid some of these types of conditions.
Nice.
And that's, again, more integrating of the technologies and obviously some of the people that are involved as well.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit without getting into specifics, because like Microsoft, companies don't like to talk about what they're planning before they actually have something meaningful to tell the public. Mm-hmm. But like, where do you see this stuff going from what you guys are innovating?
Well, a couple things. One is we're seeing a lot more need for applications, different, various focused applications for different industry segments. You know, Paul mentioned earlier the quality and traceability. So we've got a number of applications that sit on top of our system platform that we're planning for the years to come for specific industries. More generally, the other trend what we see is we've been capturing just tons and tons of data with the SQL Server and our system platform technology. But what people are looking for now is a lot more improved tools to help them make sense of that, sort of the manufacturing BI, if you will.
Sure.
And it's typically called EMI in our market space, or Enterprise Manufacturing Intelligence. Mm. So we've been doing quite a bit of interesting things in that area, preparation for data, analysis tools, those types of things.
Excellent.
So you'll see some interesting things from us over the next coming months and years in that area.
The tools that you use today, you're using a lot of Microsoft tools, which is, I find this is like, I think you're probably the first partner I've interviewed that has this sort of the depth of the Microsoft stack. I mean, there's a lot of companies that use a bit here and a bit there. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty impressive. So I'd like to get a question about that experience. but I want to get back to concurrency and just talk a little bit about, I mean, are you writing native code to handle threading, that type of model, or are you up in .NET playing with our latest technologies in that area? How's that for a question?
That's a great question. We are definitely looking at those technologies and working close with Microsoft on a project currently with that. But Orchestra currently uses the available technologies that are there today to scale out.
Okay.
It's almost a cloud type of technology for the plant floor, you know, where we can move out across multiple cores, and as the application grows, you add more application engines. They can consume more. They have more application objects running on these engines,
sure.
And people just want to put machines at them. You know, and so the scaling out has been a big piece of ours, right? Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, where we store data too, as well, and then being able to, you know, move 150,000 points of data, you know, into a back end somewhere, that's not an easy trick, right? So you need the scalability of the machine, be able to scale across the cores.
Absolutely.
So this is a very prevalent, I mean, this is some of the thinking that we have going on, and the prototypes we're working with Microsoft on, and the future of parallelism, very important to our future as well.
Cool.
That's a good point, too. I think sometimes it's lost, too. The industry we come from, I mean, real time to us isn't minutes, it's seconds and sub-seconds in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. So being able to deal with that volume of data at that rate of speed, we need some pretty scalable stuff.
Yeah, I mean, locks are not your friends, right? You don't want threads blocking. That's not what you want.
Right.
Really interesting. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's really on our minds big time, right? I don't think anyone really knows what's going to happen with the million core machines that are sort of, you know, not homogeneous, so heterogeneous cores on chip. That I think it's going to be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So we feel like you're our partners. You're helping us think through this. So let's talk a little bit about the partner angle.
Okay.
You're a Microsoft partner. You've been a partner for, it sounds like, 20 years now.
20 plus years, yeah.
20 plus.
What's that experience like? And I think it would be kind of fun to talk about how has it changed over 20 years? I mean, let's talk from the early to now.
That's great. Well, yeah, like you said, 20 years. So it started in 1987 with the first HMI, again, human machine interface, kind of on Windows. And we kind of evolved the technology up through 1997, I think, is when we did the SQL Server thing, embedded SQL Server and OEM'd it. And ever since then, we've been using, I'd say, more of the technologies. I think what the relationship's given us is, first of all, great early access to a lot of the newest and innovative stuff, so we can plan and deliver some of this stuff to our customers.
Mm.
It's always been important, and frankly, that sort of first mover difference back in 1987 for our industry was significant. Mm. Basically, it put us on the stage in this market where all the other competitors were kind of lagging in older technologies. So I would say the relationship's been fantastic from that perspective. Access to the newest, greatest Microsoft technology, helping us sort of, you know, experiment with some of the SQL Server technologies as it's evolved and others. I don't know, Paul, if you want to talk a little bit about some of the other things that we've seen with the access to the new technologies from the partnership side.
Right, the partnership has just been growing. We've had an alliance with Microsoft. We're always getting the newest things that are coming down and being able to work closely with the engineers here at Microsoft on those technologies.
Cool.
I feel like we're cutting edge a lot, but being as a manufacturing entity, our software has got to be really robust, and a lot of times it goes in there and stays for years before people change it.
Understood.
You know? So although we are very in the forefront of innovation, we try to keep innovation going. Everything that we put out in the market is super solid, and it has to go through, you know, nine ways to Sunday type of qualification, quality analysis before it comes out. So we're keeping our finger on the pulse. We see things as they're coming out. We're making sure they're baked really solid, and then we start as this has come with the Office Communication Server. We see the need for it in the market. You know, we see that it's maturing since it came out in the 1.0 version, and now it's starting to encompass all the communications possible. Right, so I can communicate with you via your cell phone, your office phone, email. This is very key to what's, you know, as this technology matures, and we're glad to be right here, you know, having been around since it was born, and now we're ready in a good position to take it forward into the market in its maturity.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. You keep us going in the right direction.
Right.
That's awesome.
So.
Well, hey, thank you for your time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Really, really impressive. Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Great.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Sure.
Thank you.
Keep up.